Dr. Rachel, Dr. Rachel, Dr. Rachel. Good morning. Dr. Rachel.
She's putting her mask on.
How you doing this morning?
How are you doing?
I am doing just fine. So I know I heard you mention mask.
you got your mask on because we're not in Dallas. We're in Richmond today.
Well, we're seeing a lot of people with masks on, Doc.
So you don't have to talk to us like we're in Dallas, right down the street from the hospital where Thomas Duncan is. How's he doing, by the way?
Well, all reports are indicating that he's not really doing as well as they suspected. He's actually in ICU, and the CDC made an announcement that he's not really doing that great. I mean, Ebola hemorrhagic fever is a very scary virus. And I think really what we have to keep in mind here is that, you know, we have a couple things at play. As potential patients with Ebola come back from Africa or actually, you know, travel here, I think what we have to keep in mind is, first of all, as we've seen with this particular case, there is a problem with our healthcare industry that, one, you know, is kind of race and socioeconomically based. So if a patient appears in the hospital and the first thing on the mind is, well, maybe this patient doesn't have insurance or I don't know what's going on with this patient, they might not end up getting the exact same standard of care potentially as someone who's from the country and actually has insurance. So they might get sent home. Then another problem is that in our country, whether you realize it or not, that 1 in 25 patients who are hospitalized actually get an infection from the hospital. So when everyone's saying that our system is really prepared, yes, absolutely. Have you ever heard the saying, you know, when you have a patient in the hospital, when a loved one is in there, get them out as quickly as possible? Well, that's why, because it's so easy to catch a hospital-acquired infection while you're in the hospital. So what we're going to see is we're going to see more of this, because actually everybody knows that if you come to the United States and you're not feeling well, that eventually someone is going to take good care of you. The problem with the Ebola virus is it's a social virus. So pretty much the sicker the patient becomes, the more help that they need, the more contagious they become, which means, you know, when they say direct contact and bodily fluids, that actually means their tears, their sweat, their vomit, their blood. So as a patient becomes sicker, as your loved one becomes sicker, you become more of a caregiver and you become more vulnerable to the infection. So it's actually a very, very scary virus.
Okay, airborne. They're saying that it's not airborne?
It is not airborne. Well, according to all the evidence that we have right now, it is not airborne. The problem being, though, if you're standing at the store and someone has the Ebola virus, or you're taking care of a loved one and they happen to sneeze or they happen to talk and spit,
that's airborne.
It is actually in the saliva. So the most vulnerable parts of your body are what we call the mucous membrane parts. So your eyes, your mouth, those moist areas of your body that the virus can get in very easily. So even though it's not airborne, a highly contagious person can give you the virus just by being kind of in your presence. Now, we take that one step further. When you see on TV people wearing face masks and goggles, it's not because they're afraid they're going to breathe in the virus. They're actually protecting those areas that we just talked about. So the key areas that they have to protect are their skin, because if there's a cut or a rash or open wound on the skin, of course, the virus is easily transmitted through direct contact, through those bodily fluids, and the eyes, the mouth, the moist areas, even the vagina and the anus, because what happens as a person is infected with the virus expands. It keeps multiplying and multiplying, and the more virus that's in the person's body, the more contagious those simple bodily fluids are. And that's
what can we do, doctor? Because you can't go anywhere in Dallas, quite honestly, without having a conversation about this.
How was communion yesterday in church?
It was very, very fast. Because a lot of people didn't want to touch, and a lot of people didn't want to touch the individual cups of the grape juice or the wafers.
Well,
so what do we do?
Yes, well, you know, that is the thing. And actually in Liberia, Sierra Leone, that's really the main way that they're trying to treat this, is by not touching each other. And we come from a community where hugging and kissing and touching are very important.
There's a lot of fist bumping.
Part of it. Yes, mm-hmm. a lot of fist bumping. So at the end of the day, if Ebola becomes a situation here where you are very much afraid of it, then you do have to stop shaking hands with people. You do have to be a little more mindful. You do have to, you know, protect yourself when you're out and about wearing sunglasses to protect your eyes, you know, so that in case someone does have the virus, their bodily fluids aren't getting into your mucous membranes. So basic flu-like precautions are basically what you're going to do, but you have to keep in mind, too, that as you're going through life and you want to help people, perhaps someone is sick next to you on the train or in the hallway, you know, you have to protect yourself and you have to make sure that you're not coming into contact with other people's vomit and urine and blood and saliva and sweat, and just really try to be mindful of it. Now, I do want to caution us. You can't just walk down the street and think that every person from Africa has Ebola virus. And that's
Thank you. Thing
I'm really concerned
Thank
about.
Thank you. I am too.
Yes, I'm very concerned about that because it actually takes, you have to have been traveling in an area where the Ebola virus is endemic, which basically means you had to have traveled to where the Ebola virus is. So, you know, the government has decided not to close all travel to people from West Africa, and I 100% agree with that. But what
they do
is...
When do you think they would do that? I mean, how many people would have to catch Ebola? How many outbreaks would you have to have for them to stop?
Well, we haven't had an outbreak in the United States yet.
That's the question I'm asking.
Trying to prevent them.
Because
no one has died in the United States from Ebola. Thousands have died in Africa from Ebola.
Yes, almost 5,000 people. So I'm assuming, we've lived in this country long enough and we've explored the history enough to know that eventually they are going to close the border. There's going to be enough fear here that's what's going to end up happening. So I want to encourage our community to be a little more mindful of the fact that every African that you see does not have the Ebola virus, and that you are not, the person is not contagious with Ebola until symptoms
start. But they could have been around somebody that might have it, and that's probably what people are thinking. So that's the fear that people have.
And can you be a transmitter, not a transmitter, but can you be a contact and not get the disease?
Well, here's the thing. You have to, the virus actually has to get into your body. So the idea that you could be in contact with the virus, it could touch your skin, and perhaps your skin has no cuts on it, no abrasions, mm-hmm. and you get the virus off of your body in enough time, there is a chance that you won't contract the virus. However, the sicker the person, the more likely those fluids are to pass the virus on to you. So it's not like whenever you talk to someone who has cared for an Ebola patient, one thing that they say is that the patient is exhausted. You know, the first sign is fever, fatigue, there's some vomiting, there's some diarrhea there, vague flu-like symptoms, but this person just wants to lay in bed and stay there. So the idea that someone would be highly contagious sitting on the train next to you, that person has probably taken a sick day from work. But the people who come in the biggest risk are the caretakers. Yes.
This is another discussion that took place in Dallas the other day. I'm sitting there waiting for my food, and the man tells me, and I know it, you know, but just how long can this stay in your body? How long, even after you are treated for the virus, how long can it stay?
Unfortunately, there was a study conducted on a gentleman who was treated for Ebola and survived, and up to even 7 weeks after the infection, there was still enough virus in his semen for him to be contagious for the Ebola virus. So
that was the discussion about semen and it staying in a man's body. And if you have any kind of intimate contact with a person who may have the virus and then in transmission that way.
Oh, it's got to be a man,
Well, no,
the bodily fluids that we have to worry about are sweat, tears, saliva, urine, blood, semen, vaginal fluids, breast milk, and vomit. All of the fluids in the body, pretty much, if you're infected with Ebola, are contagious. And that's why in Sierra Leone and Liberia, families are getting wiped out because there's so much virus in the small amount of fluids. Hugging your mom while she's crying if she's infected, you know, kissing your husband if he's infected, all of this is what how the virus is transmitted and how it has spread so rapidly.
And there's no drug available, right?
There is no drug available currently. The ZMAP has run out. There was basically enough to treat about five people, and they're trying to come up with ways to mass produce it. So pretty much now it's just supportive care, IV fluids, and keeping the person alive as long as possible.
I believe the CDC's got a stash somewhere. Everybody keeps a stash.
Everybody.
Come on, CDC. Get
Come on, CDC.
Stash.
You we know you got that it. Stash.
Thank you, Dr. Rachel.
Anytime. I wrote an article on drrachel.com for anyone who's got any more questions about
the coronavirus. We'll reprint it on Black America Web.